Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we go to Kenya, where the capital, Nairobi, is dealing with a severe shortage of good housing.
Like right now, it's raining. We have a lot of maybe the poor drainage. And then because of the overcrowding, you find that a plot, you have only maybe one bathroom and one latrine. So you're using all of you. So it's, you find it like more vulnerable maybe to cholera or typhoid, malaria.
Then, continuing with our visit to Kenya, we report on the changing way women in the East African nation are dealing with their hair.
I decided to go natural because I'll be myself, my natural hair, with my natural hair.
Not enough homes in Nairobi, and Kenyan women go natural. Those are our stories today on As It Is. Kenya's towns and cities are growing quickly. Experts estimate at least 100,000 people move to the capital, Nairobi, every year from rural areas of the country. This has caused high demand for good housing. The Ministry of Housing estimates the city needs at least 200,000 new homes or apartments every year. That, they say, would meet the demand from new people and from those who are already in the city but live in poor conditions. In 2009, the government estimated more than 3 million people lived in Nairobi. It says about 2/3 of them live in places where there is no running water, electricity, or methods to remove waste. Irene Njiri is 22 years old. She lives in one room with her son. She says it is difficult for them to be healthy.
Like right now, it's raining. We have a lot of maybe the poor drainage. And then because of the overcrowding, you find that a plot, you have only maybe one bathroom and one latrine. So you're using all of you. So it's, you find it like more vulnerable maybe to cholera or typhoid, malaria.
William Wachira blames poor housing on dishonest officials of the Department of Planning and Housing. He says the bathroom in the house where he lives is in poor condition. He shares it with other people who live there. But he says when health inspectors visit the house, they do not force the owner to fix the problems. He says the inspectors demand an illegal payment or bribe. If people living in the house do not pay it, he says, the inspectors force them to leave the home. Tom Odongo is the chief of the city's urban planning, Land and Housing Department. He admits there is a problem with the way the city inspects houses. But he said that will soon change. He says the city will soon be using its own workers to do the inspections. Now, the city pays private inspectors to do the work.
We have created in Planning, Compliance and Enforcement Directorate is actually what responds to this. It means that from the previous time we were using the private sector consultants to be our agents sometimes for carrying out inspection because of inadequate capacity internally. What now it means is that we'll be able to have adequate capacity to carry out those inspections ourselves.
The demand for housing is so high that some homes are quickly and poorly built. And some developers are demanding high payments from people who need a place to live. Mr. Odongo said the city is now treating its housing problems seriously, and there is now a plan in place to deal with them. He says in the next 15 years, the city will build enough government-owned houses to meet the demand. And he says the city will improve houses by punishing builders who do not build homes that meet the city's rules.
There has been a challenge on enforcement, especially because of weak legislation, which only fine people 100,000, which is very easy for violators to pay. But what we are trying to do now is to change the course by involving people in the process of designing a new vision for development of the city. We are coming up with something that the citizens own. And with ownership, then it would be easier for us to navigate the process of urban development because people do something that they have themselves designed.
An African housing conference is to be held in Kenya in October. Government officials, property owners, and lenders will talk about the difficulties African nations face in providing good homes for their people. You are listening to As It Is on the Voice of America. Beauty salons are filled with women who spend hours to have their hair done by trained experts. Such women turn to beauty salons for all their hair care needs, from haircuts and weaves to coloring. But some women in Kenya are now having second thoughts. For them, a weekly visit to the salon is just too pricey. So now, as VOA's Marcia James reports, they are accepting the hair that Mother Nature gave them.
Many women enjoy getting their hair done at a beauty salon. They say they feel better about themselves and their looks after such a visit. 22-year-old Monica Waifa works in a salon in the center of Nairobi. She is skilled at creating hair weaves and wigs for customers, yet she keeps her natural hair.
I decided to go natural because I'll be myself, my natural hair, with my natural hair.
After years of complex hairstyles being popular, many Kenyan women are accepting a simpler look. 25-year-old Alice Nanette says she wants to feel respected in her own skin and for her natural look.
It's very easy to maintain natural hair because, one, you don't really think so much about if my hair looks bad because you can really maintain it. I don't like weaves because I just find them being too plastic. So natural for me is the way to go.
They know natural is easier and God-given, so they are embracing it. I'm Marcia James.
That's our program for today. I'm Christopher Cruz. Please join us again tomorrow for another edition of As It Is, here on the Voice of America.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, has chosen a university town in Virginia as one of six places to test drones. Drones are aircraft without human pilots. A drone can also be called an unmanned aircraft system, or UAS. The town, Blacksburg, is home to Virginia Tech University. The university has flown and researched unmanned aircraft systems for years. But now, the research has more meaning. Researchers at Virginia Tech send reports to the FAA to assist the agency in the development of national drone rules. The FAA says most business drones cannot operate legally now. The agency plans to announce rules for how drones can share airspace in the United States with major airplane companies. The leader of the Blacksburg Test Center is Rose Mooney. She says that her researchers are doing new things with UAS.
UAS can do things that manned aircraft can't. Our first flight is going to be a larger aircraft that hasn't been flown unmanned in the national airspace.
Air information sensors are common on manned airplanes. But researchers at the Virginia Tech University Test Center have added a sensor to their drones. The sensor records airspeed and altitude, the height of the flight. The information is sent through tubes to a computer that examines stability. All of the information is then sent to the FAA. The federal agency may also rule on another device to guarantee greater safety. The device is a special eyewear that lets a person see the flight as if he or she is on the drone. Pilots on the ground can use this view to better direct the drone and keep it away from objects in the flight path. Researcher Justin Stiltner says drones can be used to do jobs that are uninteresting, dirty, or dangerous. They can fly into areas of radiation, or inside hurricanes, or over croplands to examine corn. Professor Craig Woolsey says farm studies are the main goal.
We need to do better at how we do agriculture so that we can continue to improve crop yields, and that drives us towards ever more and more technology.
Rose Mooney thinks using drones is a huge step forward in the flight industry. But drone use will not change until the FAA publishes new rules. And that is not expected to happen until late 2015. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. For more technology stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Jonathan Evans.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to This is America. I'm Steve Ember. Today, we visit Chicago, Illinois. It is America's third largest city. It has the Loop, the lakefront, and lots of exciting things to enjoy. Come along with us as we visit the Windy City. Chicago has many nicknames besides the Windy City. A number of them come from the works of American poet Carl Sandburg, including Hog Butcher for the World, Player with Railroads, and City of the Broad Shoulders. But many simply and proudly call it
my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of people too. People who smile at you.
We're aboard a Chicago Transit Authority elevated train heading for Chicago's downtown center, known as the Loop.
This is Adams and Wabash. Transfer to Orange and Green Line trains at Adams and Wabash. This is a Brown Line train to Kimball.
The system, also known simply by the letter L, carries trains from Chicago's northern, western, and southern areas, and then makes a complete circle or loop of the downtown district on a large overhead structure with many station stops running high above the city streets.
This is Madison and Wabash.
There are also two subway lines running under the loop, which serve additional routes of the city's extensive rapid transit rail network. The L's elevated railway loop is bordered by Wabash Avenue on the east, Lake Street and the Chicago River on the north, Wells Street on the west, and Adams Street on the south. Each station along the L provides easy connections to shopping, hotels, restaurants and food stands, entertainment, music and cultural centers, and city and state government offices. The Loop is also the location of the city's financial district centered around LaSalle Street. The financial district is home to the Chicago Board of Trade, the Chicago Stock Exchange, and many banks. In the Loop, you'll also find the Willis Tower. It's the tallest building in Chicago, with its sky deck observation level providing visitors with exciting views of the city. The Chicago Picasso sculpture is a popular destination in the Loop's Daily Plaza. It was a gift from the Spanish artist Pablo Picasso to the people of Chicago. It's an eye-catcher, and children love to climb on it, but no one seems to know what the sculpture represents. Chicago newspaper columnist Mike Royko covered the unveiling of the sculpture in 1967. He wrote, "Interesting design, I'm sure, but the fact is, it has a long, stupid face and looks like some giant insect that is about to eat a smaller, weaker insect." Well, as we say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. The people of Chicago are known for high spirits and a sense of fun and civic pride. For example, the Chicago River is usually colored bright green to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. On that day, people say everyone in the city is Irish. Another fun event, if not for everyone, happens during Chicago's often bitterly cold winters. It's the Polar Plunge Swim in Lake Michigan. This year, Mayor Rahm Emanuel and 3,000 other people jumped into the icy waters on a day when the air temperature was minus 12 degrees Celsius. The event helped pay for Special Olympics Chicago, a program for individuals with intellectual disabilities. Of course, thousands of people enjoy Lake Michigan during warmer weather. Chicago has that too. The city stretches along the southwestern side of the lake. The area is inviting to people who enjoy sailing, swimming, and other water sports. People exercise along lakefront bicycle paths, or they may stretch out on blankets along the wide Oak Street Beach in the Gold Coast neighborhood on Chicago's Near North Side. There are famous Chicago landmarks nearby, like the stately Drake Hotel. Towering above the beach is another one of Chicago's modern tall buildings, the John Hancock Center, which also has an observation floor. While not as tall as the Willis Tower, Big John, as Chicagoans like to call the Hancock Building, offers dramatic views of the shoreline of Lake Michigan, as well as the downtown panorama of Chicago's many tall buildings that make up its distinctive skyline. The view is especially breathtaking at night. Lake Michigan is far more than a place to spend one's free time or look out over from Big John's observation deck. Chicago is a major industrial and commercial port. It became a major port when the St. Lawrence Seaway opened in 1959. The Seaway links the Great Lakes to the Atlantic Ocean, connecting many ports in both the U.S. and Canada. In addition to its natural beauty, Lake Michigan can bring not only heavy snows and sub-freezing temperatures in winter, but a brutal wind as well. Over the years, Chicago has built the Pedway, an extensive network of underground pedestrian tunnels in the loop that provide a more comfortable way to move about downtown when the weather is unfriendly. A portion of the Pedway also connects the loop with the lakefront commuter rail stations to the east. The Pedway connects many of the downtown stores, office buildings, hotels, and apartment buildings, and even provides shops and services. So, in many cases, Chicagoans can reach their destinations without too much discomfort from the city's difficult winters. But back to Michigan Avenue, which is perhaps the best-known street in Chicago. Of course, musically, some might argue with that statement.
On State Street, that great street, I just want to say, they do things they don't do on Broadway.
More from that song later, but as we were saying, Michigan Avenue. The Chicago Water Tower on North Michigan Avenue is in the center of what Chicagoans call the Magnificent Mile. Popular stores and large office buildings line the street. The old water tower and nearby pumping station were among the few structures to survive the Great Chicago Fire of 1871. Heading downtown on Michigan Avenue, we'll stop and look up at the Tribune Tower and the Wrigley Building, watch the boats on the Chicago River, cross over the river on the Michigan Avenue Bridge, and spend some time relaxing in Millennium Park. The huge park covers 10 hectares between Michigan and Columbus Drive to the east, and between East Randolph Street on the north and East Monroe on the south. The park took almost 9 years to finish and cost hundreds of millions of dollars. Millennium Park has one of the largest outdoor sculptures in the world. British artist Anish Kapoor created this 10-ton work of public art. And the Catalan-Spanish artist Jaume Plensa designed the Crown Fountain in the park. It may be one of the world's most unusual fountains. The artist set a pool of water between two tall glass towers. Video images appear on the towers. The images are a series of pictures of objects in nature and people's faces. The water appears to fall from their mouths. The faces represent the many different groups of people who live in Chicago. About 45% of the population is white. The city also has many African Americans and people of Hispanic ancestry, and a small percentage of Asians. Over the years, many immigrants have settled in Chicago. Many people have ethnic roots in Poland, Russia, and other Slavic countries, Germany, Ireland, or Italy. But more recent immigrants have come from all over the world. Millennium Park was a dream of former Chicago Mayor Richard M. Daley. He was elected to the office 6 times and served just before current Mayor Rahm Emanuel took office. Mr. Daley and other city leaders believed a big park would bring more people, more homes, and more businesses to the area. Mr. Daley's father, Richard J. Daley, also served as Chicago's mayor for many years. Chicago is often called the city that works, and the Daleys were known for getting things done. At its best, the city's political machine has made things work smoothly without major problems. But at its worst, the buildup of power in one group led to cases of corruption over the years. The Chicago Cultural Center stands on East Randolph Street at Michigan Avenue. The building that now houses the center was completed in 1897. Many people probably could spend all day there and not get tired of it. People say the restored building looks like a home for kings and queens. Some call it the People's Palace. There are white walls made of marble from Carrara, Italy. And there are 2 domes. The bigger dome is one of the largest Tiffany designs in the world. It rises almost 12 meters above the floor. Artists and musicians present free talks and perform at the Cultural Center. Chicago is famous for its music, from rock, blues, and jazz to classical. The Chicago Symphony is considered one of the world's finest. And if you like jazz and blues, be sure to visit Rush Street.
If you could see me now, you'd know how blue I've been.
Many great musicians of the past played in clubs there, and the tradition continues today.
Perhaps then you'd realize
this program was written by Geraldine Watson, who grew up in Chicago, and by yours truly, Steve Ember, who likes to visit, ride the L, look at the exciting mix of architecture, and take pictures in the Windy City whenever he can. Join us again next week for another This Is America from VOA Learning English.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around. I love it, bet your bottom dollar you lose the blues in Chicago, Chicago, the town that Billy Sunday couldn't shut down. On State Street, that great street.